sometimes in my conversations with family or friends or acquaintances, my hobby, my passion is investing, and so I can't help but talk about it. Probably too much, probably obnoxious. I tend to geek out over it, and probably too much. I just find I'd rather talk about that than chit-chat about the weather or, you know, these things that people waste time talking about. I mean, I can have a two-hour conversation in Home Depot if it happens to turn to investing. I just find the whole thing fascinating. I mean, I think it's fun. It's funny, though. And I experience this in other areas, other fields of interest. I experience this too, but you may notice this. Like maybe you're not, well, you're probably a person that is somewhat interested in investing, or I would think, or you wouldn't be listening to me, but people will say things like, well, it's information overload, there's too many terms, there's REITs, and there's private funds, and there's real estate, and there's stocks, and there's preferred stocks, and there's B series, and there's mutual funds, and there's index funds, and there's municipal bonds, and there's short-term bonds, and long-term bonds, and interest rates, and blah, blah, blah. It's information overload. I can't possibly understand all of that information. But any subject that we like, we can understand a lot of terms and information. My son was telling me this. How's anyone supposed to know all of these stocks? Like, you follow all these. He tells me that maybe my brain works different, and so I'm able to, you know, hold all this information in my brain. And yet, he'll follow 40, 50 people on social media. He can keep up with all of their posts. He can tell you all about them. And they have names like Kardashian. Kardashian. Four syllables, right? Mutual fund. Kardashian. Or, see what I'm saying? Like, it's the same thing. It's just a word. And so while he thinks it seems a little impossible that someone could track all of this, my friend was telling me this. He works for the post office, and he's like, man, I just can't keep up with all of that. I don't know how you pay attention to all of that. And then he goes on to, you know, as later in the day, as we're talking, his passion is sailboats. And I mentioned something about sailboats just so we could talk about something I know he's interested in. And he starts telling me all about sailboats and the parts of the boats and the different radios he's looking at and how they communicate with satellites and how you can track the weather. And like, I don't know any of this stuff. And he's using terminology and, you know, nautical things. I mean, things I can't even begin to explain to you. And none of those things are harder to say than, you know, index fund or... There's no difference. Yet our brain will put up these little barriers, these little, oh, you can't learn that because it's just not familiar. This is why repetition is the mother of skill. Yes, at first, you won't understand the words. Network marketing will do this. I market, promote a very simple network market. I mean, it's simple. It's like literally sixth grade math, the pay plan. Like if I said to you, and you're not even in it, let's say I say to you, it's 10%. Well, if I said to you, here, you can have 10% of this candy bar. I mean, everybody gets that. It means 1/10 of the candy bar. You cut the candy bar in 10. But when you connect it to a pay plan or a commission and you say, well, on first level, you earn 10%. You start losing people. Well, you added the word level, and I don't know what level means. And so their brain puts up filters, puts up blocks. Oh, this is new information. We don't know this. We don't know this. And they tune out. You know, I experienced this big time when I decided I was going to try to do most of the maintenance on a lot of my rental properties. I find that I began to find it the more that I was doing this. I did it, I was forced to do this because the guy I had been using had, you know, he bailed on me. And to be honest, I had never really done this stuff. My wife's pretty good at it. My primary job was to make money. And so I spent my day sending emails, marketing, you know, talking on the phone, being a salesman, trying to sell whatever it was I happened to be promoting. And I may be promoting 8, 9, 10 different things in 8, 9, 10 different ways. And so, you know, my day can stay pretty damn busy just selling and trying to make money and talking with customers and clients and, you know, other, you know, that sort of stuff. And trying to be creative and write new ads and develop new products, right? So that can take a lot of my day, but I needed to invest. And so I began to invest in real estate. I don't trust people immediately. So the idea of me hiring, say, a management company is really hard for me. So I would rather hire someone who works directly for me and only for me, and then make and say, hey, your job is to manage these. I would rather do that than hire a company who does that. Now, right, wrong, or indifferent, that's just what makes me more comfortable. But reality is I'm probably just not familiar enough with their procedures. And if I would, repetition's a mother of skill, I would become more comfortable with it. The vernacular, I would, and eventually I would be fine with it, right? I mean, you have to be fine with it if you were to own, say you owned, you know, 1,000 properties. You can't manage that yourself. It'd be physically impossible. And so you'd either have to create this massive internal business or outsource it and hire management teams and stuff. So you'd have to get used to it. But as I was forced to move into working on rental properties myself, the truth is, I'm not good with, I'm a marketer. I write ads, you know? I mean, I was a handyman in the sense that I was in the Army and I carried a gun. So if you need me to shoot someone, I'm pretty handy at that. You know, if you need me to blow up a bridge or take out a tank, I'm pretty handy at that. I'm pretty good at taking out, you know, I spent a lot of years, repetition is the mother of skill, trained to kill tanks. That was one of my jobs, is to kill a tank physically, in person, by hand. Now, if you've never killed a tank, which, to be fair, I've only done it from a distance, but let's say, you know, we're going to kill a tank. Well, you're not going to be familiar with the tools and the equipment on how we do it, and you're going to be like, the hell with that? I don't know what I'm doing. And you're not going to engage in killing a tank, right? But through the repetition of practice and vernacular and reading and studying, the tools and the equipment needed to kill that tank become very familiar. And I had to do this with the rent, as I would have to do repairs. A lot of the people who we were hiring, you know, some didn't even speak our language, and yet somehow they went to Home Depot and bought what they needed. So here's a guy that's in my country, doesn't even speak English. Surely I can do this, right? That's what I would tell myself. And then I go, okay, well, you know, I need hammers and I need this, and as I try to buy tools, and you go up there and there's 30 kinds of hammers. Like, there's different kinds of hammers. There's claw hammers, you know, there's roofing hammers, there's finishing carpentry hammers, there's all kinds of hammers. There's hammers for demolition, you know, and then there's just your old typical hammer you think you would nail in a nail. Oh, well, I'm going to need a drill. Guess what? There's a lot of drills. There's impact drills. There's power drills, right? I can't even think of all the names. I own 4 different types of drill. Every one of them is a drill now. My favorite is the impact drill. That's my go-to drill. But you see my point. Oh, and then I need a jigsaw. Oh, well, guess what? There's like five different kinds and 20 different brands. And then you got to change all the blades out. And what are these? And this is why people hire contractors. It's not that what they're doing is hard. Because since then, since I've been forced into this, I've actually, I would complete something. I'd step back and there was a sense of satisfaction. And then one of the things I did, and to complete the task, I had to do a little research on YouTube. And then you get on there and you just get overwhelmed. Like there'd be all these videos and different opinions. You wouldn't think there's different ways of doing drywall, but there's different ways. And people have different techniques and people have different opinions. This is how you should do it. And then you watch this guy's video and he goes, no, 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 no. This is what you want to do to patch a hole. You want to do a California patch. And this guy says, no, 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 you don't want to do a California patch. You brace it behind with wood and then you put in, and it gets, and you're like, wow, this is kind of like information overload. And this is kind of how you feel. If you come into the realm of investing and you've never actually done it, people will think, you have to be smart and you have to be sophisticated. That to be a successful investor, you have to be smart. You have to be sophisticated. You have to know what you're doing. It's just not the case. Like you all, at the end of the day, my book aside, all the other books aside, it's just simply putting money into an S&P 500 index fund and just doing it all the time. You just become an investor. And you read up on it, you study it, and you look at it. And in a very short order of time, you'll be completely familiar with the process. And it won't feel weird. It won't feel strange. But you have to move past this idea that I must know it immediately. I must know everything I need to know or I can't do it. And you can't do that. You're going to always be learning. And what have I learned as I've begun pursuing doing my own maintenance, doing some of my own framing, building countertops? These aren't things that I was doing as a child. I was raised by a computer programmer. He was a coder. We didn't throw baseballs. We didn't go hunting. My dad was, maybe two steps up from a savant. Any kind of stuff like that I did because friends were doing it and they invited me along. And so this is a skill set that I have no natural ability for. None. That I just forced into my brain. And then I just practiced. Like I literally practice, I don't want to say every day, but multiple times a week. I'm working on something, researching something. What tool do I need for this? And it's the same for investing. These are the things that make life fun. See, one of the things that I find as an adult, the only challenges that many of us have is just reacting to shit that happens in our lives. Not everyone, but a lot of people. Look, you may be like, what is this guy talking about? I'm good with all this. Okay. But look at your friends. How many of them go from one problem to the next problem because they're always just reacting to problems? Everything becomes a crisis. If you need new tires on the car, well, that's a crisis because it never occurred to them that you might need to save, have to do, that would happen to you. Christmas is a crisis, and Christmas goes on a credit card. And you say, well, I didn't have any money. And it's like, well, Christmas comes every year. And so their disorganization and their, where you're just hopping out of one frying pan into the other, and you're never actually getting ahead of the problems that seem to come in your life. And so when you live like that, you don't have the luxury to sit back, contemplate, and think and study like The Science of Getting Rich, which this podcast is entitled Science of Getting Rich, talks about. That you need time to contemplate, time to study. But in that, in order to pull that off, to successfully live a life where you create hurdles for yourself, you create problems for yourself that you have to figure out how to get around or how to get over, you know what I'm saying? You create these by the way you're living. Now, most people are living a life, they're trying to avoid problems. They're trying to avoid issues. They don't want people calling them. They don't want to have to make these decisions. And I'd say, no, you want these decisions. You want people calling you. What's funny is in 17 years of landlording, I used to say I'd never had that call, but then I did have the call. People say, oh, they might call me in the middle of the night. Turn your phone off. I mean, what can you do in the middle of the night? What is the worst thing that could happen? The house burns down. The worst thing that could happen to, if you own rental property, the house burns down. You got insurance. And if the house is burning, what are you going to do about it? You're not a fireman. So that's why we have insurance. In other words, I don't need to sit around worrying about the worst case scenario. Why? I planned for it. I have procedures. I did a little research, spent some time. I bought what I, you know, got a policy from a quality insurance company. I've got an agent. And so I've got that taken care of. You know, same in investing. There's no need. The only reason someone gets, well, I shouldn't say the only reason. There are acts of God and circumstance. I get that. But let's just generally. The only reason a person, you know, becomes 50, 60 years old, you know, maybe older, 70, 80. I talk to people that are 80 and have no money. Now, they'll have all kinds of reasons. But the simplest of investing strategies would have eliminated that. It's just they lived a life by choice. And I'm not even criticizing that choice. I'm not saying, oh, they're bad or indifferent. I'm not saying that at all. You can choose this. Many people, many of my friends, many of my family members have chosen that path. That investing, too complicated. I don't understand the terminology. Right, but they can follow 14 characters on a TV show who all have different names, who are all involved in different plots, who are all doing different things. They can tell you all about that. But understanding a single fund is way too much. Way too much for their brain. Like, all they would have to do is just put money every month, every week, whatever, in the S&P 500. And at the age of 50 and 60, they would have accumulated a large amount of wealth as America grew and expanded. But what happens? Fear, doubt. I talked about this a few shows ago. The three enemies of mankind. Fear, doubt, and indecision. Fear, doubt, and indecision. And so they don't make a decision. They don't do anything. And they just live this life of going and react, just constantly reacting to the problems and hurdles in their life. And so, well, here's what I say. We're all going to have problems. I have problems every freaking day. I have problems every day. But the bigger your problems, the more money you make. The bigger your problems, the more money you make. And what I found is you begin to control those problems, meaning let's say that you start a business. Well, you're going to bring a whole new set of problems onto your life. Those are all different kinds of problems. See, the guy that owns the dry cleaners, or the guy that owns the carpet cleaning business, or the guy that owns the restaurant, the guy that drives a truck, they have different problems than I have. Now, we all have the same life problems, right? But there's different problems that affect different people. Think about these tariffs you've been seeing that we're having a tariff war with China. The average American doesn't even know what that means. What is a tariff? Do you know what the tariff is? Do you know what that means? Have you ever taken the time to sit down and look it up and research it, or you just hurl insults? Oh, they don't know what they're doing. They're stupid. But you don't actually know what a tariff is, if I asked you. If I asked you to write down and give me one paragraph explaining to me what a tariff is, how it works, and how it affects. Now, people will pass judgment on the president, and they don't even understand what it is he just did. How does that tariff affect you? How does that tariff affect you? Well, it affects me. You go, anybody buying lumber at Home Depot, you know our little spat we had with Canada has raised the price of a bunch of different kinds of wood. Now we're having spats with China and metal, so the price of nails are going up. I recently read in some areas the price of a home from brand new build, from scratch to bottom, on a $300,000 house, you're looking at $16,000 more because of the tariffs. Huh. It's kind of funny if you voted for the regime in power, which I did. I did vote for Trump. But if you were building a new house now, it just cost you 16 grand. You know? That's like, you know, that's eating your own food, man. It's eating your own food. And so we live in a world with people who just throw around opinions, but truth is, they probably haven't read much on their opinion. They probably don't understand. Do you understand how insurance rates affect? As interest rates go higher, guess what's going to happen? What is the normal course of things? Housing prices will begin to come down. For about every quarter of a point interest rates go up, you're going to see housing prices come down $5,000, $10,000. You can chart this over history. And guess what? That is no more complicated than Kardashian. Right? Big Brother. Right? Or, for God so loved the world that he gave his only... Because I talked to a lot of people who know that stuff. They know all about the Bible. And you mentioned mutual fund and their eyes glaze over. They understand the mysteries of the world. They claim to have a relationship with the creator of the universe. Woo! But man, those mutual funds are complicated. Makes me laugh. Got the whole world figured out. You know who everyone in the world should vote for? Got all these opinions. And they're broke. And broke. I no longer listen to political opinions from people that are broke. I just don't care. It's hard for me to believe they care much about what they're talking about or they've put much thought or research into it. If you haven't put much thought and research into your own self, your own self-preservation, how much thought and research could you have put into this nonsense? Get it? Make sense? See what I'm saying? So careful who you listen to. Careful who you listen to. Who you take advice from. Just because someone's your mom and dad doesn't mean they're giving you good advice. Just some someone's your friend. Oh, that network market, that's all scam. That's all pyramid schemes. This is all, is it, really? Is it? So when your broke friend's in your ear, maybe you need new friends. You know, if your friends don't understand what interest rates are, maybe you need new friends. You say, oh, Gerald, I know what interest rates are. Do you know what the LIBOR rate is? See what I'm saying? So, my point is, things at first that may seem confusing or overwhelming, or the terminology, you don't get it. What are they talking about? Your natural instinct is, this is new. I either want to learn it really fast or I don't want anything to do with it. This is what a lot of people do. I run into this all the time. They're 50, 60 years old. I'm trying to show them new terminology, network marketing. One hand, they say they get that. They say they understand. The other, they're just not going to. They're just past change. My experience is when a person gets around 40 years old, it's very hard for them to just... boom, make a change. They have to just really dig in and they have to basically join the cult to make the change. They have to literally drink the Kool-Aid. You're not going to just, oh, now I'm 40, now I'm going to do the right. It just doesn't work like that. Like something radical has to change. That's why on the cover of my book, The Money Flow, I talk about one man's personal war. Like, I had a moment where I was like, no more of this. Damn it, I'm pissed. I'm going to create a strategy. I'm going to create a system. I'm going to give myself a whole new set of problems. And here's my problems. I got to figure out how to write ads, where to post the ads, how to get an 800 number, how to record the message on the 800 number, how to create an info packet. And I just added all these new problems to my life. Because I promise you, you go around life avoiding problems, avoiding things that you don't understand, you're going to be homeless. You know, think of who shirked responsibility the most. The homeless. Now, could be reasons they're homeless. I get it. Mentally deranged, whatever. But who has the least responsibility in our world, and who has the most? And compare the income. Point being, you need to accept more responsibility. See, the key to making more money and making more wealth, people get it confused. They start looking for schemes and get-rich-quick things. You know, I did too. But you know where it starts? Accepting more responsibility. If you're not willing to do that, chasing the money never works. Now, you might cloak it in, oh, I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I'm just going to do what you're already doing. Uh-huh. That's what people say when they're trying to avoid responsibility. So the number one thing, rule, the number one rule to building wealth, in my opinion, starts with personal responsibility. Personal. Like, you take it upon yourself to add new problems to your life and to be responsible for the problems that you have. In my work in network marketing, people like to use me as the scapegoat. Oh, well, you showed it to me, so it's your fault. You made all the money. You ripped me off. This didn't work. As if I somehow, it's almost as if I somehow have a magic way of, when I mail, it works. Everyone comes in, I make money. But when they mail, it's set up not to work. And somehow that is my business plan. Like, my business plan, somehow it works for me when I mail. Somehow I have control over this. But when they mail, it doesn't. But the mailing list doesn't work. But if it doesn't work, then how, 14 years, am I still doing it? And they came in. Like, it's just complete shirk. They just completely are like denying any personal responsibility. It's got to be someone else. It can't be chance. It can't be, you know, it's got to be put on someone. Let's blame this guy. He's the one that told us about it. You know, we see this with the president. Well, it's the president's fault. And it's like, dude, how the hell is the president going to personally manage that? Like, it's not his fault. But part of the responsibility thing, take responsibility. So I do eat that. I do blame myself. I do, personally. When members quit, I feel like I did something wrong. When they drop out of my sales organization and they don't make money, I blame myself. I don't understand why it didn't work. Truth is, they never accepted responsibility, so it was never going to work for them because they didn't accept responsibility. As soon as you expect responsibility, you take ownership. As soon as you take ownership, you claim it, and it's like a universal law. The very first thing God did when he created the Garden of Eden is he told man to take dominion over it. And the way that he did that was he told them to name all the animals, to name everything. Why? Naming something implies ownership. It's the point of nicknames that you give to friends and family and cars and guns. That's your way of claiming ownership. This is mine. This is special. It has its own nickname that only I call it. Get it? Hope you have a great weekend.